Now you know how many more you can party, you can drink. And I had to say no. I did. I never thought that. So I just had to say no. So in other words, the training I got from my parents had to be internalized so that I was secure in my moral principles. So it's the same thing with it when the guru's not there or the Vaishnava is not there. We have to be secure in our Krishna consciousness because we're not always going to have a physical association with an advanced Vaishnava. So when tested by Maya, we have to say no. So that's what happened. I went to the university. They said no, and everybody else was getting drunk. There's so much social pressure that if you really want to fit in, you have to be drunk. You have to get drunk on Friday and Saturday. The halls of the dormitory on Saturday morning and Sunday morning especially, all the boys were just lying there. But you have to step over bodies to get to the bathroom. Because they were all completely drunk and vomiting too, you know. So that was my university experience. Anyway, so somehow or other I had some good training from my mother and father. So I didn't give in to it. Even though I was only 17 years old. And I was thousands of only 1,000 kilometers away from where my parents were. So I had good training. So that's the point. Good training, good association, and then you're on your own.
What should we think in a higher level?
Think about what?
What should we think? What should we always think in a mind? What kind of questions should be coming in all the time?
Well, one question is, when is prasadam? next question. Next question is, you know, what will please Krishna? You know, what will please Krishna? What will please my guru? That's it. If you think like that, then you'll always act properly. So that's the right thought. You know, and then Krishna, you think of Krishna's pastimes, you think of life's knowledge, you know, all that other nice stuff. But basically thinking of what is Goku Bhakti, my most faithful disciple.
My grandma was saying that there was a question for
them. Question.
In the case, she said, when you become a devotee, you become Paramahansa, not as one. You always target for it to be a Paramahansa.
No, you just think of serving. I don't think of becoming a Paramahansa. Just think of serving. You should not. Humility doesn't mean to think less of yourself, it means to think of yourself less.
Maharaj, Radhakant has put in one question.
Hey, Radhakant.
Yeah.
I miss you.
He said,
is not the same without you, Radhakant.
He said, when we say 24 hours Krishna consciousness, how can one be Krishna consciousness in a 7-hour sleep? What does it mean practically?
First of all, you're dreaming. You're not supposed to dream all night. It's not so healthy. You're supposed to have some dreamless deep sleep. So when you're dreaming, you can dream of Krishna, because whatever you're doing during the day, that will actually come in the dream. And secondly, you're resting up to serve Krishna. Because if you don't rest, you're going to get sick. If you don't rest, your mind won't work properly. You know, so you do need your whatever 7-8 hours of rest a night. And if you don't rest, you'll get in an accident in the car. The Prabhupada was angry when the devotees got in a car accident because they fell asleep. And someone died. The Prabhupada said the people who are driving a car, you know, long distances should get at least 8 hours a night sleep. Because we lost a lot of devotees sleeping in the cars. In the beginning days of the movement, we wouldn't let anyone get more than 6 hours of sleep a night. And it was torture. I remember Bhagavatam class was everybody was pinching themselves to stay awake. Or they were standing up. And sometimes when they were standing up, they'd fall over and fall asleep. And then sometimes we'd assign someone with a spray bottle and to spray people's faces as soon as they went. And they started nodding off. The water, obviously. And so there were many car accidents. I mean, I never got in a car accident while sleeping. But when I was driving, sometimes I would take advantage when we stopped in a red light to take a nap. And then the car behind me would wake me up. Time to drive. So that was too much. So you have to sleep a certain amount of time just to be alive, isn't it? I mean, sometimes I was in India many times. Of course, one time I was in India, and the taxi and the driver was falling asleep. You know, we were on this what's called the Yamuna Expressway. That's between Vrindavan and Delhi. The driver kept falling asleep. I said, "I'm buying you tea, whether you like it or not." You know, because normally I don't like tea, but I told him, "I'm going to buy you tea." Because otherwise, you know, and he said, "No, I don't need it." I said, "You need it. Pull up here." So we got tea and he stayed awake. So driving is very dangerous. That's very, very good. So, anyway, so your family can be Krishna conscious, if you're raising them in Krishna consciousness, everything should be Krishna conscious. You're shopping for the deities, or decorate your home for Krishna. And sometimes even the ladies can be Krishna conscious, shopping for clothes. That's one of the ladies' favorite activities. Shopping for clothes and jewelry. They should think, "I'm decorating myself to please Krishna, I gotta see." Men don't think like that. I mean, I know that I'm shopping for clothes. I just buy whatever's on the racks, you know, and put it on. I don't even care if it's or not. So the women can, yeah, well, they're shopping, they can be thinking it's for Krishna. So in this way you can be Krishna conscious 24 hours a day. Radhakanta, I wish you were here. Movement's not the same without you. I mean, I met your wife the other day, and she was crying in separation. She's going to have a baby, too. Anyway, I guess one has to do their duty. Is he still watching?
Yes, still watching.
Now he's feeling all guilty. So, any other questions?
He said he's coming on the 27th.
Coming on the 27th before his wife gives birth. Mm-hmm. That's good. It's traumatic for a lady if her husband is off somewhere when she's giving birth. Mm. My father went away when my mother was giving birth. He took his plane. We have planes. He took his plane, just went flying. I left my mother in the hospital, you know. Hare Krishna, good sailing. It's not good for the psychology. Ladies need to feel supported. So, any other questions? Just make a few questions.
How are we too much attached to our family?
Too much attached to your family life? Well, the way to overcome that is engage the family in Krishna service, and then they're devotees. If you're attached to devotees, well, that's good. No problem with that. So the same attachment that we have for materialistic persons, if we transfer that attachment to devotees, that can be the cause of the liberation. So then, you know, that's nice to be attached to devotees. I'm attached to devotees. Because I don't have any blood family. You know, I'm just attached to making him Krishna conscious. So if the attachment is to make him Krishna conscious, but the attachment is just to enjoy, then that's not spiritual at all. Like I was just talking the other day about the ceremony the ladies have before marriage, the priti bhoj. Right before the marriage, so they all go to the ceremony and show up in latest saris. It's like put on the latest jewelry and everything, and all of the ladies are just parading around like it's some fashion parade. Isn't it? You seen it? It's like, one time, this was a, I told the story the other day, but some of you weren't there. One time I was at Parshuram's house and, you know, taking prasadam, and I asked, where are the ladies? They're not here. They said, they're in the kitchen. They're hiding from me. I said, why are they hiding from me? And she said, because they're going to the Pritchie Bowl.
Yeah, waiting after the
and they don't want you to see them in that condition. So I walked into the kitchen and I saw them. And if someone says, I don't want you to see me, that means I want to see them. And they were dressed up like deities. Like little Radharanis or something like that. And I said, what happened to you? You know, all the jewelry, makeup, and everything like that. And I said, don't you know you're not the body? Anyway, so that is not Krishna consciousness. Simply showing up one's body. But if you're dressing nicely to please Krishna, not to just prove to the other ladies you're a better place, isn't it? I mean, I imagine there's some politics just like, you know, I have better clothes than you. And then if someone shows up in the same outfit that you have, you have a nervous breakdown because you're so high. Isn't it? Yeah, it's just like the most traumatic experience you've ever had in your life. So we can get dressed up nicely for Krishna, but just to show off. I mean, I know even psychologists like that, but that's not very good. So, I mean, there's a lot of things people do that has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, like watching rugby games. The other day, I was sitting in my room and, you know, all the kids were screaming and yelling. I thought, oh, it must be a vacation. So I asked the devotees, I said, oh, is this a school holiday today? They said, no, everybody's home because they're watching rugby.
Monday.
That was Monday. They're watching rugby games.
Well, the office
they went on screaming till the night. So, I mean, that's not Krishna consciousness. I don't think there's a way of engaging that in Krishna service. Unless you sponsor the team and they're wearing on the jerseys. You know, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna service, you know, something like that. Then it's all right. So, yes.
I'm just going to share something with you.
Yeah, sure.
I have to say, you read Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavad Gita. I've read a lot about it. And there was this thing about Rana. So, they gave me that. I'm going to start reading it. So, you know, I'm into it and then, you know, this is where his dear father passes away. The third chapter. This is where I finished that.
Right.
I was thinking, you know, when I was reading the Lord's Chapter and Countess, this is the kind of people who I had. Growing up from a child,
right.
And all the different camps. I just want to say, I'd love to hear your first encounter with those ones.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's nice, I just want to say one thing, but it's nice you're reading the Lila Amrita, because it's the best way of understanding Krishna consciousness. You can read Bhagavad Gita, but that's a little theoretical. But when you read about a person who is Krishna conscious, then you can understand what Krishna consciousness is. He's like the personification of Krishna consciousness. So it's like watching a movie for the person's life. So my first encounter, with Prabhupada was in 1968. I was listening to the radio. This wasn't a physical encounter. I was listening to the radio, and I heard Prabhupada chanting on the radio, chanting Krishna. And basically, something just really like struck me. It entered from my ear to the heart, and it was like a wake-up call. It was like, wow, what are you doing with your life? This is what you're supposed to be doing. And my life really changed at that point. I was in university at that point, but my life changed. And then right after that, I was started chanting Hare Krishna right after hearing Prabhupada started chanting Hare Krishna. I was already a vegetarian long before that, because I realized how cruel the animal that I was. So I started chanting, but I didn't want to join the Hare Krishna movement for a variety of reasons. Perhaps the biggest reason was the style of dress. You know, basically, very few men want to wear a dress. At least in the Western world, and even in India nowadays, basically nobody wears a dhoti like this, except for, you know, some old sadhus. So, but if you join the Hare Krishna movement in those days, you have to wear a dhoti. Nowadays, it's different. You know, people can wear pants, and dhotis, and whatever. You don't discriminate. So I didn't want to do that, and certainly I didn't want to join an institution, because the few times I visited the temples, I didn't have a pleasant experience, because people would preach to me in a very heavy way. They would tell me, you know, basically you're going to become a dog in your next life. I just didn't appreciate non-philosophical thoughts like that. I was more, you know, I was educated from an educated background, so more that. So I was avoiding the devotees. Whenever I saw a devotee, and I was driving my car, I would turn and I would do a U-turn. You go to U-turn?
Yes, U-turn. She knows you did.
U-turn.
You
would say that there's a family U-turn. Yeah. Yeah. So I would make a U-turn and drive in the opposite direction. So then, fast forward to 1971. I was living in a place called Greensburg, Florida, in the United States. And then I heard the problem was coming the next week. So when I heard problem was coming the next week, something in my mind just went ding, you know. So I don't know why, it was just like Krishna directing me through the heart. I walked to the temple, or drove my car to the temple, and said, can I join you? Something I didn't want to do, but it was like Krishna took me over within the heart. And basically, the temple president, who's a good friend of mine now, that was Sri Dadi Lamar, he was a grahastha. He said to me, of course, but you got to shave off all your hair. And I had hair here, there, everywhere. And I looked like a bear, basically. Because in those days, everybody had long hair, even the businessmen. Even the businessmen had hair down to their shoulders.
What a transformation.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, all the hair came off. And then the temple president, he said, well, I can see you for the first time. I can actually see what you look like. So anyway, so then a week later, Prabhupada showed up at the temple for a lecture. He was there for 3 days. And just being in Prabhupada's presence, first time I saw him walking in the temple, it was like being in the spiritual world. It's like I forgot I was here in this world. It was just like, huh? And it was like the whole space the Prabhupada was in expanded to eternity. You know, infinity. It's infinity. Expanded to infinity. And Prabhupada spoke, and you know, I heard his lecture. I went on some preaching programs with Prabhupada, the TV program that I arranged that night. But I didn't arrange that, so someone else arranged that. And then we went into Prabhupada's room at midnight after the TV program. And Prabhupada was just sitting in his gumshoe. You know, it's like a little towel like that. And you could see all the skin was golden colored. Prabhupada was really golden colored. And he was, what can I say? He was giving initiation to people. And he was just like a photo. Amazing. I mean, first encounter, it's hard to explain. And then we drove Prabhupada to the airport. And myself and some of the devotees brought the whole big Vyasa Sangha from the temple to the airport. You might have heard that story before. There's the Vyasa Sangha, basically as wide as this couch. And we had a van. And it had to stick out into the other lane of traffic. We were so crazy because we thought Prabhupada should not sit on an ordinary seat in the airport. So we thought, you know, let's bring a Vyasa Sangha. So we brought it to the airport in like a really heavy, and there were like 6 or 7 of us carrying this thing through the airport. And Prabhupada looked and he started laughing. Just take it back. It's ridiculous. You know, Prabhupada was wonderful and very humorous too. And he goes, Oh yeah, several things happened when Prabhupada was asked when I was with him. He had a really great sense of humor. Prabhupada was asked, why do you have a bald head? And the lady who was asking him had a very short skirt on, and her legs were exposed. Mm-hmm. And Prabhupada said, yeah, it's better to have a cool head and warm legs. And all the devotees were laughing, like, hey, poor girl. But anyway, so that's the experiences that probably drove me to the airport, so I'm off, and then later on I saw Prabhupada a number of times after that, but it was like no experience I've ever had in this material world. But also when I first met Prabhupada, it was like remembering who I was, who he was. It's just like, you know, deja vu, you know, past life experiences. I'd say, wow, here's my eternal father. And that's really what Prabhupada is. He's my eternal father. And from that point on, I always had my relationship with him. But the Prabhupada Leela Myth is a wonderful book, because it really helps you understand what it means to perform devotional service. And there's other books about Prabhupada too. I mean, we have like, must be about 20 books about Prabhupada, written biographies. And different remembrances and devotees. You can even go on the internet. And on YouTube, there's a lot of Prabhupada memories. Hundreds of hours of devotees like speaking. You can just Google on YouTube and Prabhupada memories, and you hear all these devotees speaking about their personal encounters with Prabhupada. And I find that very inspiring too. Because I have my personal encounters, but you hear about how other devotees related with Prabhupada. And some of them were with Prabhupada for years. Like there was this one devotee, who's a friend of mine, Shruti Kirtan. He was Prabhupada's servant. And he spent years just like assisting Prabhupada, basically living with Prabhupada for years. One day we should invite him to Fiji. That's a good idea. Yeah, he's never been here, has he?
He came to Prabhupada.
So he came to Prabhupada?
Yes, sir.
But I mean, he never came.
No. Kadisori Prabhu came after 40 years or so.
Oh, sorry. Okay. And he felt plenty of problems. And then Shizukiri is especially sweet. As anyway, that's Prabhupada. So, should we take Prasad?